drive, chip, and putt. Golf is so easy. Four? Okay, maybe the occasional wedge. Let's talk golf. It's the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN Chicago. Presented by the Glenview Park Golf Club. Now here are your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Rocky.
And welcome on in to the CDGA Golf Show here on ESPN 1000. Don't forget, we're also on 100.3 HD2, and you can watch us on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN1000Chicago. Also on YouTube, youtube.com. Just search ESPN Chicago. You'll find the CDGA Golf Show. Tyler Rocky, Mike Gilligan, we talk golf with you every single Saturday throughout the golf season, 8 to 10 a.m. right here on ESPN 1000. And it's all brought to you by our great friends over at Glenview Park Golf Club. Tyler Rocky here at the State Street Studios. Mike Gilligan out and about today at beautiful Cog Hill. How's it going out there, Mike?
Good morning, Tyler. Yeah, what a beautiful morning. We are set up literally between the first tee of Dubs Dread and the first tee of the Ravines course, staring out at the putting green. It's going to be a wonderful day here in Chicago, and we are at one of the most iconic public golf facilities, not only in Illinois, but really in the United States, let alone the world. 72 holes out here at Cog Hill, and let me tell you, the parking lot is filling up as we speak. It's going to be a wonderful day out here.
Cog Hill, home to some great winners as well. You look at their track record of the events that they've hosted, from the likes of Tiger, who's won there countless times, Justin Rose, Dustin Johnson, Matt Kuchar won the US Am that was hosted there in 97. So the home of great winners, and also the home of Mike Gilligan today. So are you going out and playing after?
Well, you know, that's part of the benefits of this job at times. We're gonna Will from our office is out here with me, and we're looking to squeeze out as soon as this show is over.
Awesome. Well, I might have to have Jake do the last 15 minutes and get you guys off early.
There you go. Hey, that would be actually kind of convenient, but we're not sure which of the four courses. See, that's one of the beauties of Cog Hill. They have a golf course for any ability of any type of individual. I mean, if you are a top, you know, single digit and want the test of all tests, you've got Dubs Dread to beat you into the ground. And if you are somewhat of a novice and don't want to get beat up over here on this side of the property on courses 2 and 4, you go over into 1 and 3, and they're more set up for more be the mid higher handicappers. So Cog Hill is really, really quite the facility. Not many 72 hole venues around in the United States anymore.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a look at what's been going on this week in golf. The big news is that the European Ryder Cup team, the captain's picks are finalized now by Luke Donald. So the automatic qualifiers, you had Matt Fitzpatrick, Tyrrell Hatton, Victor Hovland, Robert McIntyre, Rory McIlroy, and John Rahm. Those were your auto qualifiers. And then the captain's picks were made. Ludvig Åberg, Tommy Fleetwood, Nicolai Højgaard, Shane Lowry, Justin Rose, and Sepp Straka, the six captain's picks for the Ryder Cup today. When you look at the captain's picks, any surprises, any names that maybe got left off from Luke Donald?
Well, I mean, I think really the biggest European omission potentially was going to be Adrian Mronk from Poland, who's currently ranked 51st in the world. But what Luke Donald ended up doing is he took the hot hand, the young guy, Ludvig Åberg. And Ludvig is, you know, only, I think, 19 or 20 years old. He's going to be among the youngest ever to play in a Ryder Cup match. But Ludvig's never played in a major championship. He hasn't played in a British Open, a Masters, a U.S. Open, or a PGA Championship. So, in my opinion, Ludvig is going from the frying pan right into the fire without any major, major championship experience with him. But, you know, a situation like that, this could make Ludvig that much a more formidable Ryder Cup player for years and decades to come. But Ryder Cup can also kind of ruin a person mentally if they're not careful. So Ludwig was the one that I think was more of the surprise pick. But I also understand why he did it. I mean, the guy can play. I mean, he is unbelievable. He's consistent. He's going low, and he just won. So, you know, he's got a very hot hand, and I think Luke Donald is going to go ahead and try to marriage that up with some experience and try to make a formidable pairing out of Ludwig and another player to be named later. But, yeah, the rest of the picks are pretty much, I think, what we thought. You know, and the Sepp Straka is very interesting. You know, Sepp is both kind of here in America and overseas. So it's funny, Sepp Straka probably wouldn't have even sniffed making the American team, but he certainly positioned nicely on the European Ryder Cup team.
So looking at Ludwig's being included on the team here, you know, I think you brought up something interesting there of getting some experience. And this is a weird year on the European side, because none of the LIV golfers were eligible. So you're not seeing guys like Ian Poulter, Sergio Garcia. No, but this is something that, you know, maybe you're grooming someone for the future here. And I don't want to say Luke Donald, this is a throwaway year for them because it is on your home soil. But I think if there is a year to maybe get a guy ready, get a guy some experience, this is the year to do it. Even though it is on your home turf and you want to defend your home turf out in Rome, I still think it is maybe the year to do it, because there is a quote-unquote built-in excuse here. And quite frankly, these two teams aren't playing on the same field here, because one is allowed to take on LIV golfers. Now, they didn't maybe take on as many as some people maybe anticipated they may take on, and the other team's not. Like, there's a strict set of players that are not going to be qualified for this event on the European side, so maybe it does feel like a little bit of a weird year for a Ryder Cup making the captain's picks there.
I wouldn't even say maybe. It is a weird year. I mean, it is just going to feel awfully strange not to see Ian Poulter, Sergio Garcia, Lee Westwood, or, you know, the rest of the characters that are, or villains, I should say. But Ludwig and a few of the others have LIV to thank for this opportunity. But I think for Ludwig, you know, it makes sense to give him a start in this Ryder Cup competition and format. You know, now it makes a lot of sense because they are on their own soil. He doesn't have to go into, you know, a hostile environment without ever even being in one, let alone a major. So I think this is actually, you know, a smart move by Donald, especially if he puts the right flavor of experience with him. I think that could be a formidable pairing, or the event may get too big for him and they may sense it right away, and you might not see a lot of him after the first day, and you may not see him until Sunday. So I think he is sort of, you know, a wait-and-see proposition on Friday to see just how well he comes out of the box, and if the event isn't too big for him, and if he responds well, we could see a heck of a lot of Ludwig all weekend long.
You know, he does have skins on the wall, all right? Like, even though he is only 23 years old, he's won the Ben Hogan Award twice. That's something that hasn't been done since John Rahm. For those who don't know, the Ben Hogan Award is basically college golf's version of the Heisman, as the best collegiate player in the world there. He's won the Nicklaus Award. So, like, he's got some accolades to him as a very young player. But, again, this is, like you said, this is trial by fire for Ludwig Åberg, being a member of this European Ryder Cup team. So it's going to be a quite the test when you look across and you see maybe the lower rungs of the U.S. side. And I mean, in terms of guys who and where they performed throughout the regular season and in on the PGA Tour this year, like, the worst guy on the U.S. Ryder Cup team is Justin Thomas. And if that's who's going head to head with him, I really like the Americans' chances.
I agree. And, you know, again, the highest ranked player on our team is in fact Justin Thomas at 26th in the world. So again, this team after the first six starts to get a little bit spread out in terms of where they reside in relationship to the rest of the world's players, with Ludwig being the highest ranked at 90th. Nikolai Hogard is 78th. Robert McIntyre, who actually made the team you know, on points, is 54th in the world. But, you know, I think the European Ryder Cup team's chances to win are going to reside on the guys that we don't really know a lot about because we don't see them on a regular basis. So I think it's going to be an interesting weekend for all of us in America to get to know these players, their personalities, and how they respond to the biggest stage of them all. I think the Ryder Cup is a bigger, bigger stage than any of the four majors. It puts you on a platform which is very unique because, see, most of the time these players are playing for exorbitant amounts of money, but not this time. They're going to only play for the pride and the patriotism of their region, or in our case, our country. So a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of patriotism, a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of emotion. And it's your ability to keep that emotion in check when you feel like, you know, you've got the world either in favor of you or against you, and how do you respond? So, you know, I look at the two guys that have the most amount of pressure coming into the Ryder Cup, and there's one from each team. It's Justin Thomas for our team, and it's Ludvig for their team. And they were picked
for very different reasons, too.
Like, the exactly. One was picked because of what we think he can do, but JT was picked because of what he has been able to do. So it's the cast of two different stories out of opposite ends of the spectrum. And that, to me, is going to be the most fascinating thing for a fan to watch, how this all plays out, and to really watch how these two play on Friday, because that is going to dictate, I think, a lot of whether or not we see them or don't see them until singles.
So the United States, I'm looking at FanDuel right now, the United States minus 115 to win, Europe plus 130, a tie, you get 12-1, long odds there. Just after seeing the European team be announced, you kind of feel a little bit better about the Americans' chances, even though it is on European soil here. I think we kind of knew going into it we would feel a little bit better about it heading into the Ryder Cup, but just because of the fact that the U.S. can kind of go off of whoever they wanted, they could pick whoever they wanted, whereas there were tight stipulations on the European side. Like, what is your biggest cause for concern if you're a fan of the U.S. team here leading into the Ryder Cup? Because for me, like, you look at who's on the European side, just when you stack the rosters, it's a no contest, it feels like.
It does, but I just feel like the Europeans have a different system that doesn't necessarily allow the American fan base to get to know these players. Because let me tell you, even though they are ranked 90th and 78th and 54th in the world, these guys are amazing, amazing players. And I don't think they get enough credit for how good they are, because they're playing on what I call, well, I'll call it the 1A tour. Because if, you know, number one is a PGA tour, this becomes the 1A. But again, the way they formulate their team is completely different than how we do it. So I just think that, yes, we do look great on paper, but this thing is played out in the field, and we could be pleasantly surprised in a way where we run away with this thing, but it wouldn't surprise me in the least if the Europeans give us fits, because some of these guys could come into their own. Who stays hot? Does Rory's back remain healthy? Does that become problematic? Because if you remember, in Whistling Straits, Rory was hardly to be seen. I think he went 0-2-1 at Whistling Straits. So is Rory going to be a formidable opponent in this, or has the season taken its toll on Rory from a physical perspective, and he's going to be the, you know, the Rory we saw at perhaps the Masters? And I think for both teams, who can stay hot? You know, they talk about keeping that hot hand, but remember, we picked our team a couple weeks ago, so the Ryder Cup is still yet a couple of more weeks from us. So can you keep that same momentum, that same being in the zone, staying on top of your game just as it was where you left off? That is going to be the biggest challenge at hand. So for some people, this break may be welcomed, but for others, it could be the worst thing that happens to them. But we won't know until we get to Rome.
You know, it's interesting you bring up the stuff about Rory, the health, and all that. I almost feel like if you were Captain Zach Johnson, maybe you look at a few more LIV guys because they don't play as strenuous of a schedule. And again, it's only going to be Brooks that's there, but I wonder how hard of a look guys like DJ and Bryson were given at the end of the day, given their Ryder Cup track record. And then on top of that, the fact that, you know, they don't play the same strenuous schedule as the 90 to 95% of the rest of the people that are partaking in this event. So I wonder how hard of a look those two guys were given. But we will discuss a little bit more Ryder Cup when we come back. Also, the numbers are out on Full Swing. Some interesting numbers. Remember the hit Netflix series Full Swing. Some interesting numbers about how it grew the game of golf. We'll talk about all that and give you our moments that we hope the camera was rolling for in 2023. All that's coming up next. This segment brought to you by Geneva National. Experience 54 holes of legendary golf at Destination Geneva National. The CDGA Golf Show. We'll be right back.
Welcome into the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000. Presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. Here's your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Rocky.
This segment brought to you by Tour Edge. Tyler Rocky, Mike Gilligan with you every single Saturday here on the CDGA Golf Show, 8 to 10 a.m. on ESPN 1000. We talked a lot at the beginning of... And when I say beginning, I'm talking like back in February, Mike, when we were at the Chicago Golf Show out at Rosemont in the Stevens Convention Center. But we talked a lot about Full Swing and the Netflix series that gave you a behind-the-scenes look at PGA Tour players and just the everyday grind that they had to go through to get ready for tournaments. And it was a really fascinating watch, even for non-golf fans, just to get an inside look. It was by the same people who did Drive to Survive, which did an inside look at F1 racing. And then you saw that sport take off with a lot of new fans and viewers of the racing. And now it's become such a huge thing. So golf and tennis got their own versions of that. And there are some interesting numbers that you sent along to me. So among Netflix's Full Swing viewers, 63% of the viewers say they tuned into PGA coverage in the 2 months following the debut of Full Swing. So that was the early stages. So this came out in February. So this, we're talking about the March and April portions of the PGA Tour there. 11% of viewers say they had not tuned into PGA Tour coverage in the 6 months leading up to the debut, but tuned in after watching. 42% say they spent more time watching pro golf after watching Full Swing. 36% say they spent more time engaging with pro golf on social media after watching Full Swing. 27% say they spent more time reading pro golf news articles after watching Full Swing. The total audience delivery was up across the board in 2023 with the Golf Channel making the biggest gains. And then there were bigger gains internationally with total linear viewership up 21% across 14 comparable markets, according to the PGA Tour. So all this, I think, you got out of it what you intended when you set forth with Full Swing and making that a part of the fabric of the PGA Tour. We know that the cameras were rolling this year once again, but I think this is a really good thing for golf. It's a good thing for professional golf. We know golf was already a sport that was on the rise, largely in part due to COVID, and seeing that many more people go out and play golf, watch golf for a period of time when it was the only thing on television. It was either you watch golf or you watched UFC at that point. They were the only two sports going for a while. I think the PGA Tour should be thrilled with what they got out of Full Swing, and hopefully there's more to come.
Yeah, and I'm surprised those numbers aren't even bigger, and I want to say they probably are, but I bet they're being a little bit conservative with them. But no doubt, I think this Netflix series, they're onto something as far as trying to build and gain further eyeballs and interest and, you know, ultimately more people playing the game of golf. So I thought it was very, very well done, and the numbers don't lie. So it did educate people who weren't necessarily into the game and got them into the game. And for those that already knew how special this game is, it got them more entrenched. So I can't wait for the next Netflix for sure, or for the next series of Full Swing, for sure.
So I've got a few events here, and I'm sure you've got some as well, from this season on the PGA Tour of, damn, I hope the cameras were rolling for that. Now, we do know the cameras were rolling at the RBC Canadian when the merger was announced. And this is, it was one of those big kind of by coincidences. Again, they don't film 365 days a year, but it just happened to be one of the select days that they were filming. And so we know that the merger is going to be a part of the next iteration of Full Swing when it's released. I'm assuming it'll also be around February like it was this past year. But we know it was rolling during the RBC Canadian. I've got a few other events that I am hoping we got a good glimpse into. All right, so one of them I think you have to have, and you have to have the entire story of it. And I don't think they went into the event with the story, but if you didn't come out of the event with your story, you weren't doing your job. And that was at the PGA Championship following around Michael Block on that Sunday.
No question. And that would have been one that I would have had down. I mean, really, just to follow him as he approached the 15th tee on Sunday and then take him all the way through 18 and what happened when he walked into the clubhouse thereafter. Mm-hmm. That's what I think would be really, really cool to see. And I'm sure there are different angles and perspectives of the week that Michael Block had, because you talk about a guy, we had no idea who this guy was on Monday, but we couldn't get enough of him by Sunday.
Right. Michael Block, again, for those who don't remember, he was the PGA pro. He was the club pro out of California who finished 15th at the PGA Championship. So he has automatically qualified for next year, and then he had the miraculous hole-in-one. He dunked it. That was slightly spoiled by Jim Nantz, but that's all right. It was a great moment nonetheless. And just following him around, the emotion of everything, and then him going out and playing in the next event as well. It was all a lot to see, a really cool story there. But how about just the PGA Championship in general, too? Brooks is your champion there. You've got the first live guy to win a major, and really just following around. I know Brooks got a big piece of the spotlight the last time around, and I don't know how much live content we're going to see in the next season of Full Swing, but Brooks, you can't ignore what he did at the Masters, and you can't ignore what he did at the PGA Championship. I think the live story cannot be told in this golf season, so you have to put in Brooks, you have to put in the merger. Like, there's a lot. You have to put in Phil. You have to put a lot of Phil from this year, whether it was his runner-up finish at the Masters, whether it was his everything that's come out about his gambling over the last year as well. Like, there has to be some Phil coverage in here, whether it's – and again, I doubt Phil's a part of the behind-the-scenes that's following around, but you have to have some of the reaction to other players to Phil, because a lot of these guys grew up watching Phil – and a lot of these guys maybe learn some things about Phil along the way.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think with Phil, I think it's more the player's reaction to learning about what's going on with Phil. But you mentioned Brooks Koepka, and I think it would be interesting to follow Brooks from the back nine and what happened at Augusta to arriving and getting through the PGA Championship. And you know, he won't say exactly what he did, but obviously he played to win and not in a prevent defense when he got to Oak Hill. So he just maintained that kind of mindset, if you will, versus what he had at Augusta. But at that, but you bring up the PGA Championship, and I think Netflix in Full Swing can do at least one show, if not two, all about the PGA Championship, because it had so many unique twists and turns to it, obviously with the live aspect. But you also had the zany. And one of the things I'd love to see is what happened to Tom Kim when he walked into the locker room after falling in the mud. Yeah. I mean, that guy had to be absolutely razzed and barbecued by his friends and colleagues on the tour. So I do think that there are going to be some pretty humorous, lighthearted takes, and that would be one I'd really like to see. The other one I'd like to see was the reaction to Rory at the the WGC Dell Technology Match Play event down in Texas when he drove the ball 375 yards and flew it like 349, and he, you know, hit it to 3 feet. It may be the tee shot of, you know, the decade, let alone the year. Yeah. So, you know, you had some incredible play that could be captured. But the other one, talk about drama, would be, I would love if there was a way that Full Swing could be filming while the captains are making the calls to the players who made the team and also who didn't make the team.
Little Hard Knocks-ish.
I'd love to have heard the conversation. Yeah. I mean, really, I would have liked to have heard the conversation that Luke Donald had with Maronk, and the same with Zach Johnson, you know, having it with Keegan Bradley.
And
know,
Justin.
A tough conversation.
Justin
to
Thomas, too.
Listen. Well, and Justin. It, there's another one, for sure. So it would have been interesting to see that kind of perspective from behind the scenes. And I think it would give us, as, you know, viewers, just a perspective of just how meaningful making a Ryder Cup team is to these guys, and specifically to a guy like Keegan Bradley. And when I think about a guy like Ludvig, for example, it immediately takes me back to, is he one of the, you know, offspring, if you will, of the Tiger factor? Here's a guy that probably grew up looking at Tiger, and he, is he going to be the first of what I call a lot of young players coming on the scene, because we are now going to start to see the after effects of what Tiger has done and generated in the interest of youth a number of years ago, and now they are all starting to come onto the tour. And they're coming on the tour with the same mindset, which is to play fearlessly. So that's why I do fear a guy like Ludvig. But, you know, again, getting back to the Netflix, I think there are an immense number of angles, and I think just covering Ludvig alone at the Ryder Cup could be worth something.
Well, a couple others I just want to run by you real quick. I think you got to tell the Ricky Fowler story. I think you also have to look at the PGA FedEx Cup playoffs as well. BMWs were fantastic, whether it was Homa's record-setting round and then Victor Hovland following that up. I do think we need a Victor Hovland episode this time around. The St. Jude as well with Lucas Glover and his story of redemption as well. And then the last one, this is a smaller one, but we know the cameras were rolling at this event. At the RBC Canadian, Nick Taylor winning it with the walk-off eagle against Tommy Fleetwood on that miraculous putt. I feel like you got to have the RBC Canadian champion, one of Canada's own, Nick Taylor, on there too.
Absolutely. And that would be, you know, I think the RBC would be a show all in itself.
Could do a whole season.
One I would throw back out there. Yeah, it really could be. Another guy and a fan favorite, Tony Finau. Mm-hmm. I would love to see, because you remember, this is a guy who wins in Mexico, and just a matter of an hour or two thereafter, he's out caddying for his kids playing night golf.
Yep.
But we gained a perspective of who he was in the first series. But, again, Tony Finau just showing his true colors as the ultimate father and the ultimate player and the ultimate colleague and friend.
All right, when we come back, we will talk with James Colgan from Golf.com and discuss the Ryder Cup and some of the picks that were and weren't made and everything else in the world of golf. We'll do that with James Colgan when we come back. This segment brought to you by Tour Edge, the CDGA Golf Show. We'll be right back.
From PGA to where you should play, this is the CDGA Golf Show with Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
This segment brought to you by Zero Friction and their new Wheel Pro Golf Bag. Tyler Aki, Mike Gilligan with you here on the CDGA Golf Show, talking a lot of Ryder Cup, a little PGA Tour year in review as well today. Well, let's jump on out to the Jersey Mike's hotline. Jersey Mike's a sub above, where we find James Colgan from Golf.com. He's with us here on the CDGA Golf Show. Good morning, James. How's this going?
Good morning. Good morning. How are you guys? Very excited for the end of the PGA Tour season, getting our first golf off season in what feels like maybe a decade, and leaning right into the Ryder Cup. So busy couple weeks here in the golf world, but a good one.
No doubt about that. So just when you look at the picks that were made by Luke Donald for this year's European Ryder Cup team, what did you make of that squad?
You know, I think the Europeans were at a pretty strong disadvantage given the developments of Liv Basically, the way that the rules and the lawsuit situation broke out, nobody who was a true European Tour style competitor for LIV, so your Ian Poulters or your Lee Westwood, were able to be considered for this roster because they were ruled ineligible by the Euro Tour court proceedings. And so what that kind of led to was a ton of roster turnover from these longtime Ryder Cup stalwarts that we've seen on the European side. Your Sergio Garcias, your Ian Poulters, you know, that group. So there's been a lot of roster turnover. And looking at this European side, I think we see some of the impacts of that on the second half of the roster, particularly in names like Nikolai Højgaard and Ludvig Åberg. And, you know, we can talk a little bit more about some of those, underdog selections in a little bit. But I think on the whole, this is a European team that, every year they come into this Ryder Cup looking, every 2 years they come in looking pretty underrated. They like playing this underdog role, and I think they are set up beautifully to do that again this year. They've got a very, very talented roster, particularly the front half of their roster. There's an argument to be made. It's been playing better golf than the front top half of the American roster this whole year. I think the Europeans have a much better team than it might look on paper to maybe the average golf fan, and I'm fully expecting that we're going to get another highly, highly competitive Ryder Cup when we land in Rome here in another 2.5 weeks.
James, good to have you on. As you look into your crystal ball, and we look at the European Ryder Cup team, who is going to surprise us in a good way, but who's also going to surprise us and have a Ryder Cup that they didn't intend to have, in your opinion?
Well, I think the most likely candidate to surprise us in a good way would be Ludvig Åberg, the 23-year-old rookie. He's never played in a major championship. He just left the college ranks and entered the PGA Tour. And now, all of a sudden, he finds himself as ostensibly the 12th man on this European Ryder Cup roster. He is an insanely talented young player. He's one of the more gifted rookies we've seen come on tour in quite a while. But it was still pretty shocking to see him land on this roster in the first place. And even more so when you consider some of the names that were left out, especially Adrian Morant. He was a guy who you know, I thought was kind of a lock to make this roster and then wound up getting left off. A guy who can surprise us in the opposite direction, though, I think you've got to be thinking about Rory. Given the year he's had, some of the struggles he's had in the last, you know, the last couple seasons, I think he comes into this Ryder Cup with a ton of pressure to put together a strong performance. And I think, you know, he's definitely feeling kind of the legacy pressure to perform up to the level that everybody knows he's capable at. If he does not do that, I think he's going to be feeling that pressure very quickly. And as we've seen over the span of the last couple months, when Rory is feeling pressure like that, it can really go only one of two ways. So if I were picking someone who were most likely to have a surprisingly bad Ryder Cup, I think he would be the name that I would kind of have to choose.
Interesting. Down on Rory there, James. James Colgan with us from golf.com on the Jersey Mike's hotline. You bring up something, though, very interesting with Rory, because it feels like a lot of it is between the ears now with Rory, and a lot of it is down to a three-letter acronym of LIV right now that's really messing with Rory's head at the current moment. But do you think, if we do end up seeing the merger really come to fruition, do you think it's going to take a lot of weight off of Rory's back and we will start to see him get back into the major winning Rory that we know?
You know, it's hard to make sense of how this merger situation is affecting some of the guys who have been most invested on the PGA Tour side, or on the LIV side for that matter. We just, you know, it's so early. It's kind of hard to know. You know, all of these LIV guys kind of like taking the victory lap, but I'm not sure they realize that, you know, this merger could very well mean the end of the existence of their league as they know it. And, you know, on the PGA Tour side, a lot of these guys, you know, have expressed their displeasure at the way that the merger has been handled, but they might not actually dislike what the final outcome is, which would be, you know, a ton of money for all of the top end guys on the PGA Tour. So, you know, it's hard to say how it would affect Rory, but I think just not having to maybe answer a ton of questions about this on a yearly basis, just not having to be in all of the meetings shaping the future of the PGA Tour and what that's going to look like, you know, not having the pressure of, you know, this existential threat against the sport. I think it would help him. I think it would help his overall ability to focus on the tournament and focus on tournament golf, which is, of course, his first job. But yeah, it's a fascinating thing. You know, I was at the U.S. Open Tennis about a week ago now, talking with John Rahm, and, you know, he has a very, very different perspective on all of this. You know, some of this has to do with his relationships with some of the players who have gone for LIVs. He's obviously very close with Phil Mickelson. But I think something that's very interesting is John kind of intimated to me that he doesn't really, you know, get as caught up in the weeds of all of this stuff as some of the other players in the tour ranks do. And, you know, I think that has served to benefit him over these last 2 years. This has been a massive thing in the world of golf. It's been a massive story. It's also been an all-consuming one for some players who would otherwise rather be winning tournaments.
James, I'm going to switch you over to red, white, and blue for a second. Scottie Scheffler. Scottie's got a chance to end a season that has been most unusual for Scottie Scheffler. Is he going to end the season on a high note or a low note?
Well, I had written a column earlier this week about some of the players that I thought were under the most pressure at this Ryder Cup. And one of the first names I included in that story was Scottie Scheffler. He has had a historically good season from tee to green on the PGA Tour, arguably one of the best in the last 30 years. And as you all know, that also includes, you know, the Tiger Woods era. So to say you had one of the best seasons in the last 30 years, that's a big deal. Now, you know, the folks at home are probably wondering, if he's had such a good season, why haven't I heard his name more? It's because he's putted so poorly, it has kept him from winning tournaments. It's kept him from contending at majors. It has really, really been, you know, a massive, massive thorn in the side of what was otherwise a historically great season. And so I think he enters Rome under a ton of pressure. I think he knows that if he comes away in another week, you know, kind of another losing effort, this season for him will probably be remembered for its disappointments more than its successes. And he is not someone who likes to view his career and his accomplishments that way. But, you know, he's a competitor, and he knows what the impact of all of this would be. I would say I think the break from golf is probably a good thing for him. From the Tour Championship to the start of the end of the PGA Tour season to the start of the Ryder Cup, a lot of these guys will have the better part of a month to kind of just work on their games and, you know, get to know the course and realm and whatnot. And there's not a lot of tournament golf going on. I think that's a great thing for Scotty. I think he needed to take a step away because the putting thing became just all-consuming for him. You could tell he was thinking about it on every shot he was hitting. And as the season went on, it really wore on his game. So, yeah, I think he enters Rome under a ton of pressure to play well and particularly to putt well. Because if he leaves the season without a Ryder Cup win on his resume, I think he's going to be wondering, you know, what the heck happened? I mean, I just had one of the best seasons of my life, and I came away without really any top-line win to show for it.
James, before we let you go here, based on the intel that you've received, how close were Dustin Johnson and Bryson DeChambeau to being on this team?
You know, I think that's something that, you know, the average golf fan might have been surprised when they saw that those two guys had not made it on the roster. I was around both Dustin and Bryson not long before the rosters were finalized, and I didn't get the overwhelming sense from either of them that they were that they were planning on being in Rome. I think this Ryder Cup roster, I think Brooks was always a lock to be on this team for the U.S. side. I think he, you know, his performance winning the PGA Championship made him just too good to not be on this team. But Dustin Johnson had a couple of majors to kind of make a name for himself, to make his performance known. He played well at the U.S. Open, but not spectacular. And then he missed the cut at the British Open. You know, kind of the same goes for Bryson. He played okay at the majors, but nothing spectacular. And given the fact that, you know, the live competition aspect, you know, it raises questions about team fit and availability and all of these things, I don't think they were particularly close to being on the team. I think the real question mark player for the Americans was Justin Thomas all along. And while it seems like, you know, U.S. captain Zach Johnson kind of had his made up that Justin was going to be on the team, lest we forget, Justin Thomas has not been one of the best 100 golfers in the world over the last 6 months. And he was picked as one of the 12 best on the American side. That is ostensibly based on his resume, based on his previous Ryder Cup experience. And I'm sure there are more than a handful of LIV fans out there who are saying, if we're picking players only based on their previous ability, why isn't Dustin Johnson on this team? Because he's been such a successful player over the years. It's a fair argument. I think, you know, there's a little bit more that goes into it. But yeah, I don't think that we got really any sense that these LIV guys outside of Brooks really were in much of consideration at all.
And then real quick, you got 15 seconds here. USA minus 115 or Europe plus 130?
All right, call me the Grim Reaper here, but the Europeans haven't lost on European soil in 30 years. I don't think it's starting now. U.S. roster has too many weaknesses in it. I think the Europeans come out on top, but it's going to be close. It's going to be very close.
All right, James rolling with the dog. James, appreciate your time there, and best of luck. You're going to be out in Rome, right?
I will be, yeah. My flight leaves in a couple days here, and I am preparing for a European vacation and also, you know, to eat plenty of pasta to justify my golf course walks each day.
All right. Well, enjoy it out there in Rome, and we look forward to checking in with you maybe one more time before we wrap up this season. Have a good one.
Cheers, guys. Thanks so much.
James Colgan on the Jersey Mike's Hotline. Jersey Mike's a sub above. This segment brought to you by Zero Friction, the most innovative products company in golf. The CDGA Golf Show will be right back.
Golf is on your mind and on the air right now. This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, 100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. Presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
Segment brought to you by Tullamore Resort. Experience a Michigan masterpiece. Tyler Rocky, Mike Gilligan with you. Just wrapped up our conversation with James Colgan. Mike, you surprised at all? He's rolling with the Europeans.
I really am. But, you know, if you got to look back at history, sure. But I think our team is better. Yeah, we do maybe have a hole here or two, but I honestly think that we are favored for a reason, and we're favored going on their turf. So, you know, but he may know something that we don't. And, you know, anything can happen in Ryder Cup. I mean anything. And that's what makes this so unique. They're not playing for any money, and they get more nervous and more uptight and more stressed when they play in this event than they do when they play in the U.S. Open. It's just crazy.
All right. It's going to be an interesting Ryder Cup. We'll continue to talk about it next week as well. And even like a few more weeks from now, like this is going to be one of the most interesting Ryder Cups because of all the different nuances with LIV and everything else. So we'll continue to give you some Ryder Cup thoughts when we come back here on the CDGA Golf Show. This segment brought to you by Tullamore Golf Resort, up North Michigan Golf without the drive.